Today's daf is daf Nun Gimel Amud Aleph. And we started learning the Mishnah yesterday. We'll continue with the Mishnah on the top of daf Nun Gimel. Ugsharim Unefashos Sheyesh Ben Beis Dira. Again, we're talking about how to calculate the tchum of the city, the outer bounds of the city. And in this case, close to the city, there are gesharim, which are bridges. And there are nefashos. Nefashos is a euphemism for a tomb. They used to build a little structure around a gravesite. And they used to set up a beis dira. Now, what was this beis dira? Who was living there? After all, when we calculate the outer bounds of the city, we're talking about places where people live. And the answer is that they used to set up a little booth, so to speak, for a shomer, for a security guard, over the bridge. And that makes it into a beis dira. Now, as far as nefashos are concerned, this tomb on top of a grave... Just excuse me for one split second. Just trying to... There's a discussion about that, whether or not they used to have a shomer there. Now the Mishnah says, here on the top of Daf Nun Gimel Amud Aleph, Umotziim es hamido kenegdon. In other words, when we're organizing the bounds of the city, and we're trying to calculate 2,000 amas from the outer boundary of the city to set up the Tchum Shabbos, then if one of the above juts out, let's say, for example, we'll give an example on the northeastern side. It's like on the northeastern side of the city, what we're going to do is we're going to set up a line from that point where you have this the outer houses on the outskirts of the city, and we're going to imagine as if we would stretch a rope, you know, to get a straight line, and that's going to be the outer bounds of the city. So we have now bridges, and we have tombs, these little buildings on top of the graves. And then we have the case of a measure in which we're moded kinegdon. And we, as we said before, we imagine a line straight across the side of the city, and the city limits are determined by lines that are drawn, and those lines have to include houses which protrude the furthest in any direction. A city's boundaries are always drawn at right angles to each other, thus extending the city's perimeter to include a projection in the northeast corner of the city, for example, has the effect of extending the perimeter across the entire side of the city, as if there were a corresponding dwelling projecting from the southeast corner of the city. Right, so we were in the northeast corner, and now we move over to the southeast corner. And we imagine a straight line across. And then the Mishnah says, V'osim osa kimin tavla mirubas, which means that we, once again, envision as if there were a square around the city, around the boundaries of the city. That's called merubas, a square. A tavla is called a luach, a tablet. So, for example, you could have a city that's, let's say, 2,000 amas square, and we're going to measure 2,000 amas outside of this entire square. But not only that, we're going to create a diagonal from, again, we'll give an example, let's say the northeastern corner of the city. If you would draw a diagonal to the square, then you would extend that area. So what it means is he's going to gain a little extra area when he calculates the tchum based on these corners. Let me read to you the note over here about imagining the square tablet so that he gains the additional area in the corners. He says that the Mishnah is dealing with the case of a square city. When establishing the tchum, the boundaries are drawn parallel to the city's boundaries, 2,000 amas away from each side of the city. These lines are then extended until they meet to form a rectangle. For example, if the town is 2,000 amas by 2,000 amas, the tchum forms a square of 6,000 amas by 6,000 amas. Now, as measured from the city's corners, the tchum extends more than 2,000 amas to allow for a gain in the corners. Now, the Mishnah is talking about a case of a square city. If the city is rectangular rather than square, the tchum areas are drawn to form a rectangle. And the Mishnah is telling us that the corners of the tchum boundary are not rounded, but rather they join each other at right angles. So the tchum in the corners exceeds 2,000 amos. And we once had this back on Daf Mem Tes, with regard to measuring the tchum from a place that's outside the city. And our Mishnah here reflects the sheet of the Chachamim in that Mishnah there. So that, for example, if you would draw a diagonal line from the southeastern corner towards the rectangle around the city, it would give you an area, a distance of 2,800 amos. And you may remember that we went through those calculations then. The Gemara says, Rav Shmuel, they argue, Tani Chad Tani, according to one girsa, shall we say, in the Mishnah, it's Kesed Ma'abrim Es Ha'arim, and the word Ma'abrim is spelled with an ayin, V'chad Ketani, according to another opinion, it's Ma'abrim with an aleph. And there are two different ways of reading the Mishnah. And the Gemara now explains the different compelling reasons. Mandatani ma'avrim with an aleph. Ma'avrim means aver. In other words, we add, so to speak, limbs to the body of the city. Umandatani ma'avrim kisha ubra, like a pregnant woman. And that's the extra area that we're adding to the city. Now, once we've quoted Rav and Shmuel and their debate about Ma'abrin, the Gemara quotes a whole bunch of other debates between Rav and Shmuel about the meaning of words. Ma'aras HaMachpelah, the Torah speaks about the area where Avram buried his wife. Rav and Shmuel, what does Machpelah mean? Machpelah means double. So Chadom, according to one opinion, Shnei Batim Zeh, Lifnim Mizeh, right? So you had one structure, but there was an outer room and an inner room. V'chadomar bayis v'aliya al gabav. According to another opinion, there was a structure, and then there was a second floor on top. Bishleim, the Gemara says, L'man di'omar zeh al gav zeh, haynu machpelah. The language of machpelah indicates that there are two roofs. And that makes sense if you say that there was a second floor. So there's a roof on one floor and a roof on the other floor. El Olaman di Omar. Shnei batim zelifnim mizeh. There's only one roof, and there's one room inside another. My machpelah. What does the word machpelah mean? It doesn't sound like machpelah means there are two rooms to a house. There's something double over here. And the Gemara answers that the word machpelah means Mamre Kiryas Ha'arba. I'm sorry, I skipped. Shekfula bezugos, that there are two zugos times two buried there. So you have Adam v'Chava, that's one zug, and then Avram and Sarah. Now we have another two, which is Yitzhak and Rivka, and then finally Yaakov and Leah. And then another issue here about Maaras HaMachpelah, the Pasuk says, Mamre Kiryas HaArba. And the end of the Pasuk says, Hi Chevron. So what is the meaning of the word Arba here? Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Kiryas Arba Zugos, that there are four couples that are buried there. Adam Mechav, Avram Vesara, Yitzchak Rivka, Yaakov Aleh. Another machlokas between Rav and Shmuel. Vayhi Bimeam Rafel, Melech Shinar. Now Chazal knew that Amraphel in this pasuk is a reference to Nimrod, but yet the Torah calls him Amraphel. So what's the meaning of the word Amraphel? Is this some sort of an acronym, of some sort of a pseudonym? And a machlokas Rav Shmuel Chad Amr, according to one opinion, Nimrod Shmo Velomenikra Shmo Amraphel. Why did the Torah add this pseudonym Amraphel? So you take the word and you split it into two. She'omar v'hipil le'avram v'idul sof kivshaneh. So you take the aleph mem resh, and you get the word omar, which means he declared. And then you have to pay lamed at the end of the word, and that's miloshan l'hapil. And this is Nimrod who threw Avram into the burning fires. Chad Omer, according to another opinion, Amraphel Shmo, his real name was Amraphel, and the pseudonym was Nimrod. V'lomenikra Shmo Nimrod l'fisha himrid es kol olam kulo olav b'malchuso. Now, he established himself as a deity, and the whole world rebelled against God. So this is Nimrod. Honestly, I never understood in certain circles, I don't want to say out loud, they name a child Nimrod. Nimrod was probably the worst person who ever walked this earth. So I don't get it. Anyway, another machlokes between Rav and Shmuel about the meaning of a word. Vayakam melech chadash al Mitzrayim, a new king. Rav Shmuel chadomer chadash mamash, meaning the old paro died and the new paro took over the kingship. Chadomar, no, you know what the word chadash means? He's not a new king. The old king is still alive, but Nischadshu Gzerosov. He changed his approach and his attitude towards the Jewish people, and he therefore issued all the decrees to enslave the people and subjugate them. Mandi omar chadash mamish, dichsiv chadash. I understand what would compel us to say that there was a new king, because it says Chadash, Umandi Omar Nischadshu Gzerosov. Where does he get this from? Well, what compelled him to say that Nischadshu Gzerosov? And the answer is Miloksiv Ayomas Vayimok. Normally, when the Bible wants to tell us that some king died and he was replaced by his child or whoever it is, so it would have said Vayomas, the old king died. Here, the Torah doesn't mention that the old king died. How could the Torah describe this king, this pharaoh, as not recognizing Yosef? We know that he recognized Yosef. I mean, Yosef stood in front of him and interpreted his dreams. I mean, if you say it was a melech hadash, that the old pharaoh died and this was a replacement, then I understand he had never encountered Yosef. So the Gemara answers, "My Asher lo yadas Yosef." We have to reinterpret this pasuk. Da'avi domi keman delo yadale le Yosef klal. This we call this in Yiddish machnish visedik. If you're familiar with that phrase, meaning he made himself dumb, as if he doesn't know Yosef. He knew Yosef very, very well, and he remembered that generation. But nevertheless, he was mechadish his gzeros, terrible gzeros against klal Yisrael. He never remembered all the goodness that Yosef brought to Mitzrayim, really saved the entire civilization of Mitzrayim, and he made himself as if lo yada es Yosef. This is what we call rewriting history. And we know that anti-Semites rewrite history. Even in yesterday's news, We spoke about one of the leaders who denies the Holocaust. Okay, then. Now, at this point, we started Agadata. Not that what we did until now wasn't an Agadata, but this is a very long Agadata. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Now, the first part of the Agadata deals with what we call Yiridas Hadoros, that the older generations were so much greater than the younger generations. And Rabbi Yochanan is going to speak about his Rebbe, whose name was Rabbi Yoshaya Berivi. Berivi is an acronym for a great man, one of the greatest men, if not the giant of his generation. Shmona Asar Yomim Gadalti Eitzel Rabbi Yoshaya Berivi V'lo Lamati Menu Ola Dov Recha Mimishnasenu. And I was able, and I merited 18 days to be you with this great giant and his Talmidim. But I didn't learn much about the Mishnah, except for one thing. Ketzad ma'abrim is ha'arim be'aleph, that we should read it with an aleph. So the Gemara finds this comment, if you take it literally, very difficult to swallow. Eini, is this really so? V'amar Rabbi Yochanan, 12 talmidim, hoyelo l'Rabbi Yoshib Rebbe, 18 yomim, gadalti b'neihem, v'lamadati lev kol echad v'yecha v'chochmas kol echad v'yecha. Rabbi Yochanan seems to interpret the wonderful experience that he had in 18 days that he spent with the Talmidim of Rabbi Oshaya, that he was able to see through to their heart. In other words, he recognized each one, how sharp he was, how profound he was, what the nature of his and scope of his wisdom was. Now, you know, if he got to know the Talmidim so well, how could it be that he, you know, during that period of 18 days, he learned nothing more than the word ma'abrim, that you should read it with an aleph? And the Gemara says, Lev kol echad v'yechad chokmas kol echad v'yechad gomar, but Gemara lo gomar. He got to know the Talmidim, but he didn't really learn any Gemara, you know, any insights into the halacha. That's one interpretation. Gemara is going to give a whole bunch of others. Ibai, same another way of interpreting it is, Minayu didhu gomar. He was very chummy and close. He rubbed shoulders with the Talmidim of Rav Oshaya, but he never got to really know Rav Oshaya, so he didn't really receive any Torah from Rav Oshaya. And it sounds like, according to these interpretations, Rav Yochanan is saying this with a krechts, you know, that I didn't really get the most out of those 18 days that I could have gotten, although I did get to know the Talmidim, but not the Rebbe. Ibois Ema, here's another approach, that Dover Echad b'mishnasenu ka'omar. You know, the tradition, the transmission of the Torah is made up of Mishnais and Brisos. And Rabbi Yochanan is saying that although I didn't learn much about the Mishnayos while I was there, but I did learn a lot about the Brisos. And if that be the case, then Rabbi Yochanan is not krechtzing, he's not crying about those 18 days. V'yomar Rabbi Yochanan, k'shayinu lemeidim Torah eitzel Rabbi Yoshaya, when I joined together with the Talmidim to learn from Rav Oshaya, Yoshim Arba Arba Biyama Achas, we would take a square Amma, which is a very small area, and we'd have four Talmidim sitting on one row and four Talmidim on the other row, and these two rows were all squished, and they were all condensed into one Amma. I mean, I don't even know how you could do such a thing, but The idea that's being conveyed here, if you take it literally, is that they got close to each other in order to listen, to hang on to every word from Rav Oshaya. Amar Rebbe gives us a similar comment about how eager they were, Kshayinu Lomdim Torah, Eitzer Abelozim and Shamua, and Ayinu Yoshim Shisha Shisha Bayam Achas. We would have two rows of six Talmidim within this square of an Amma. That's how eager we were to hang on to every word of Rabbi Lozar. V'yom Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Oshaya Beribi Bidoro, Ki Rabbi Meir Bidoro. If I could compare Rabbi Oshaya in his generation, it would be to Rabbi Meir in his. Shlo Yochlu, in the case of Rabbi Meir, Chaverov Lamad Al Sof Daito. Rabbi Meir was so profound in his analysis of the Torah, He was so sharp that the generation didn't really appreciate him. They couldn't even understand the depth of his, appreciate the depth of his wisdom. His Af Rabbi Yoshaya, the same thing happened to Rabbi Yoshaya in his generation. Lo Yochlu Chaverov Lamod Al Sof Daito. His colleagues could not understand the depth of his principles, his concepts, his statements, his rulings. They were too profound for the generation. Now, I would ask a question here. We believe that every person is placed and born in a particular generation because of his relationship to that generation. He has a particular role and contribution to make for that generation. It seems kind of odd that if we take these cases of Rabbi Meir, and now we could add Rabbi Oshaya, that their generation didn't really appreciate them. And perhaps we could say the following, that there are two types of Rebbeim that are in charge of transmitting the Torah, two different fundamentally different categories, and both complement each other. Those Chachamim that communicate very well with their generation, they speak on the level of the generation, and there are those Chachamim who speak in what seems more obscure on a very high level, and the generation doesn't seem to be able to climb up to that level and really appreciate that intellect, that profound understanding. But nevertheless, it's very important for that generation to see that they have something to strive for. And it could be that only generations down the line, after the Maseiros HaTorah through generations, will the subsequent generations be able to understand the depth of what was said many, many decades and even perhaps centuries earlier. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, and now again we're getting to the concept of Yiridas HaDoros, Liban shel Rishonim kepischo shel Ulam. The understanding, the wisdom, the insight of the earlier generations could be compared to the great opening of the Beis Hamikdash, the open area of the Ulam, which was actually 20 amos wide. And you may recall that at the beginning of Masecht Erevin, when we spoke about a Korah, we spoke about pischo shel Ulam, and V'liban shel chacham achronim, but our generation, the great scholars, are kipischo shel heichal. And the heichal was half the size of the ulam. It was only 10 amos wide. So basically, we're like 50% of what was once 100%. And that's the chachamim achronim. This is already the generation of Tanoim before Rabbi Yochanan. The Anu, in our generation, Rabbi Yochanan kicks off the Amoraim, Kimelo Nekev Machat Sidkis. We can only compare ourselves to the eye of a needle, of a very thin needle, but that's used to sew, you know, various rips in garments. I mean, that's not even a fraction of the 10 amos width of the Heichal. Now, Rabbi Yochanan didn't specify who are the Rishonim and who are the Achronim, so the Gemara now offers that to fill in that blank. Rishonim, who does he have in mind when he speaks about the Rishonim? Rabbi Akiva. Achronim is Rabbi Lozim and Shamua. Ikediyami, another tradition has it that Rishonim is Rabbi Lozim and Shamua, Achronim is Rabbi Oshaya Berebi. Or Abaye. Now Abaye lives in a generation after Rabbi Yochanan. Vanan, if we were to compare ourselves to the generation of Rabbi Yochanan, Kisichta Beguda, we're like a small peg that is knocked in, hammered into a wall, Ligmara. Ligmara. Klomar, Kmo Yoseid, Shenoatzim, also Benekev, Tsar, Shebekos, Shainin, Nichlas, Boel, Bedoch, Akach. Anu einu yichom lahavin mash anu shomim ki ma'at ubekoshi. So we have a very limited understanding because the mashal here of Abaye is that when you take this peg and you hammer it into a hole, a very small hole in the wall, it doesn't really fit into that hole. It's only bedochak. And that's how we try to understand the Torah. It's only bedochak. Omar Rav Vanan, he compares his generation, ki etzba'ata bekira lisvara. What does this mean? Kira is a kind of a wax, and if you put your thumb in the wax is already coagulated. It's very strong, very tough. And he's using that as a marshal that if you put your finger into this wax, you can't really successfully push it through the wax. But what you could do is it attaches a little bit to the outside, the surface of the wax. And we also can only understand with our svara just a limited amount. The Maharsha writes that Rava was in the same generation of Abaye, and therefore Rava's not coming to explain how it went down, Yeridas Hadoros, from the door of Abaye until his door. They were contemporaries. Ella, but rather, kol echemim omar inyan echad. Each one emphasized one dimension. Abaye spoke about Gemara. Gemara is the tradition that's transmitted from one generation to the other. And it's very difficult to retain that tradition. All the massive Torah that's been transmitted to us, we forget it. We don't have a constant grasp on it. We can't retain. Retention is very hard for us. However, once we finally are able to remember it, then we could understand it. Rava is going a step further. He's saying, Svara, even that which we try to understand and dissect logically is very difficult. And that's even more difficult than Gemara. Gemara, at least you have to hear what you've been taught, what's been transmitted to you, and try to remember it. That's one challenge. But what's even a greater challenge is to try to understand and analyze the Gemara, understand its, the halakha and its underlying reasoning. Amar Rav Ashi Anan ki etzba'ata bibira l'shichecha. Well, like imagine putting a finger into a cistern, into a ditch, and it's very easy for the finger to go into the bar, and that's how easy it is for us to forget our Talmud. Amar Rav Yehuda Marav b'nei Yehuda. So the Gemara now wants to know, is there a way, a secret method, so to speak, that's recommended in order to retain the Torah that you learned so that you shouldn't forget it. And we're all looking for that fountain of youth. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Marav, B'nei Yehuda, those who live in Yehuda, as opposed to Galil, Yehuda's the area around Yerushalayim in the center and Galil's up in the north, Shekpidu al Lashonam, they spoke in a very clear and precise way. They chose their words very carefully. Niskaima Torasim b'yadam, they retained their Torah. They didn't forget it. But Bnei Galil, in contrast, Shalok Pidu al Lashonam, they were not careful about the way they spoke. In other words, they didn't precisely define the halacha. Lo niskaima Torasim b'yadam, they didn't retain their Torah. So the Gemara doesn't understand what's going on. Midei b'kpeida talya milsa. Does the kiyum of the Torah, the remembering of the Torah, depend upon how makpid you are on the lashon? Let's take it a little bit differently. Ella, but rather bnei Yehuda didaike lishna, that they would review their studies and be bindaik with whatever was transmitted to them, and they reiterated the same language that they heard from their Rebbe. So they would review word for word what they heard from Rebbe. And not only that, umisneche lehu simona. And they would always have mnemonic devices to remember. They would give what we call simonim that would help them remember. So they went out of their way to not only receive the tradition and the transmission from previous generations, but to do whatever they could to retain the knowledge and not forget it. But Bnei Galil, lo daiki lishna, they weren't so careful about every word that they heard from the Rebbe in order to transmit it and review it. Velo mistachilu simonim, nor did they make these simonim these memory devices as long as Kaima Torah San Biyod. And by the way, Rabosai, it seems very fascinating that the Gemara puts emphasis on repeating the precise language of the Rebbe, the way he transmitted the Torah to you. In Brisk, amongst the Soloveitchiks, this was a, you know, like a cardinal principle. They say about one of the Talmidim of, one of the outstanding Talmidim, Reb Chaim Brisker, that when he would say over Reb Chaim's Torah to a certain other Talmud, in this case the Brisker Rav, Reb Chaim's son, Reb Chaim's son would very often say, no, it could not be. In other words, you're not saying it over exactly the way you heard it from Rebbe. On the other hand, that same Talmud that I mentioned to you, that came under critique because maybe he didn't say it over word for word, he was very careful to try to say it over exactly the way he heard it from his Rebbe. And they say that when he would say over the Shia from his Rebbe to his Talmidim in the next generation, he would actually lift up his pants exactly where Reb Chaim picked up his pants. And that's how they far that they. I remember once Rav Soloveitchik told us over something from his father. This had to do with whether Kriyas HaTorah is a Chovas Yachid or Chovas Tzibur. And father said that that the Ramban is of the opinion that Kriyas HaTorah is a Chovas Tzibur. And then Rav Moshe said that this he heard, but we don't know where the Ramban is. So I remember when the Rav said this over, Rabbi Blau, one of our Talmidim, one of our, he's an older colleague, but he found the Ramban inside. So he opens up the Ramban to show it to Rav Soloveitchik. Rav Soloveitchik closes the Gemara and he says, we don't know where the Ramban is. We have to say it over exactly the way we heard it. In any event, B'nai Yehuda Gomru Michad Rabba. One advantage of B'nai Yehuda is that the Talmidim would choose their Rebbe Muvhak. And his Kaima Torah and the other, therefore they were so successful. B'nai Golil or Gomru Michad Rabba. B'nai Golil used to hop around. They had many different Rebbeim, and they heard it in different languages, and the transmission was never absolutely clear for them, and therefore they got confused, and they forgot it. I have to add a footnote here that on the other hand, there are many scholars who would encourage you and recommend that you learn from different Rebbeim, but it could be that's on different levels, but when you finally reach the high level, you should have one Rebbe Mufak. Ravino Amar B'nai Yehuda the Galu Masechta, what was great about the Bnei Yehuda is that they would analyze the Torah, reveal its deeper meanings, and transmit it to others. This Kaima Torah and B'yod. Bnei Galil, the Logali Masechta, they did not reveal the inner meaning of the Torah and transmit that to the next generation on this Kaima Torah and B'yod. We see from this Gemara how important it is to not only learn Torah, but also to teach it to others. That which you teach, you remember. Now the Gemara contrasts David HaMelech with Shaul. David Gale Masechta. David not only understood the Torah, but he transmitted it to others. Shaul Lo Gale Masechta. Shaul was not a teacher of Torah. How do we know this? David Gale Masechta, the Ksiv Bei, the Pasuk says, in Tehillim, Yirecha, Yir'uni, V'yismachu, which means that everyone was happy with David because his rulings were very much, you know, corresponded to absolute truth. He would say that something is also something that's mutter is mutter. And that's how he influenced and impacted on the next generation. Shaul, the Logali Masechta Ksivbei, what does it say about Shaul? This is a Pasuk in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yud Dalet. It says, V'chol asher yifneh, and here we're looking on Daf Nun Gimel Amid Beis, Yarshia. In other words, he wasn't zocha to teach halacha and to be mora hora. Now, the Pshuto Shal Mikra is referring to the milchamos that Shaul fought against the nations. And the word Yarshia doesn't mean what we think it means, that he caused people evil, but rather Yachrid v'yaval bel, that it caused fear in the hearts of his enemies and it confused them. So that the Gemara is on a different level. You know, we're darshaning a pasuk, but the drush is quite far from the Pshuto Shel Mikra. The Pshuto Shel Mikra actually lauds Shaul for his amazing military conquests and instilling fear in the hearts of his enemies. So one of the Achronim wants to say that this Gemara is actually talking about the great merit of Shaul, as this Pshuto Shel Mikra is talking about the greatness of Shaul. And the fact that Shaul did not teach others and pass on the Torah as David did, that was because of his extreme modesty. And as a result of that modesty, God bequeathed to Shaul HaMelech the ability to defeat and be victorious over his enemies. And that's what it means that Shaul delogali mesechten, he didn't pass on the Torah because he was such a humble individual. Therefore, he was zocheh to b'chol asher yifne yarshia, meaning that he would destroy and be victorious over his enemies in battle. Omar Rabbi Yochanan, minayin shemochalo HaKadosh Baruch Hu al oso avon. The great sin of Shaul was that he wiped out the city of Nov, which is an Ir Khan. And this is a story in Shmuel Aleph, in Perkof Aleph, Perkof Beis, that when David ran away from Shaul, he came to Nov Ir Kohanim. And the Kohen Gadol, whose name was Achimelech, would supply David with mazon v'cheref, based on David's request. And then Shaul found out about it from Doeg HaDomi, and he commanded Doeg to destroy the city of Nov, of Ir Kohen, because they provided so much protection, etc., for David, who was in Shaul's mind, unfortunately, somewhat deranged mind, but he thought of David as the as his arch enemy and his the one who would take over the Malchus from him, etc., etc. But how do we know that? That Shaul did tshuva and Hashem was mochel him. Shenemar, it says in the pasuk, "Umachar atov hanecha imi." In other words, when Shaul brought up Shmuel from the dead through the Balas Ov, they asked Shmuel, what should they do with the Plishtim that are fighting against them? And Shmuel told them that they should go out to battle, but you will die in that battle, you and your children. And from the word imi, we're going to derive the conclusion that imi b'mechitzasi, that Hashem is saying you will join me within my mechitza up in Olam Haba. So it means that the sin was nimchal. Om Rabbi Abba, I ika demashil lehu. If there's someone who will ask Lebnei Yehuda d'daiki lishna, should it be ma'abrin tanan or ma'abrin tanan? No, we should ask the Bnei Yehuda because they were so medayik in the Lashon that they would certainly know what is the proper, exact, correct text of our Mishnah. And in fact, we asked them about a different Mishnah, Masechta Bechoros. And this is on Daf Mem. In Masechta Bechoros it says, Akuzu. And we're not sure if it's Akuzu with an Aleph Tanan in the Mishnah, or Akuzu Tanan with an Ayin, Yadeh. And the Bnei Yehuda knew what was the right girsa in that Mishnah, so we should also confer with them about the right girsa in our Mishnah, Shalinu. So they asked the Bnei Yehuda, the Amri Le, and they answered the questioner, Ika de Tani Ma'avrim, Ika de Tani Ma'avrim. Ika de Tani Akuzu, Ika de Tani Akuzu, meaning basically both girsos are part of the tradition, and they're both elu v'elu, you know, they're both correct. Now, where do we find a source for this conclusion, this assumption, that Bnei Yehuda daiki lishna maihi? Where do we know this from, that the Bnei Yehuda was so careful and precise about the language? That Hu Bar Yehuda, there was a story about one person who came from the Bnei Yehuda. The Amalu, his friend, said to him, Talis Yeshli Limkar. I have a talis to sell. Omrule. So the potential buyers responded. They say, my gavon talischa, what color is your talis that you're selling? Omalehu. So this person from Yehuda responds to the potential buyers. He says, kisrodin ale adama. It's like the color of something called tered while it's still growing. And it's very green in color. Okay. So let me give you his translation here. He says the following. That when they asked him what color is your cloak, he answered them, its color is similar to that of a beet on the ground. And again, he was so precise in describing the color so that there would be no possibility of ambiguity, that no one would claim that I wanted to buy something red and instead I bought something green. So even though in Hebrew we use the word yarok, but nevertheless, yarok itself is not exactly always green. It could be a little bit more yellowish. And for this you have to learn Masechta Nida, about Kesamim. Anyway, to avoid any possibility of misunderstanding, he compared the color of his talis to something that was well known, and it's the top of the beet plant, Ale Adama, and that's the exact color it is. B'nei Galil Delo Daika Lishna, Maihi, what can you prove to me that the Galileans were not precise about language? And we derive it from a brisa that Hu Bar Galila, Davika Ozil Viomalahu, there was a person from Galil, and whoever he met, he would ask them, Amar Leman, Amar Leman. Leman means to whom, or who owns something. When you say Leman, and he says, Amar, Amar Leman. Now, what is he referring to? I mean, apparently, they didn't even pronounce words correctly. Amru Le, they said to him, Glila Shota. Chamar lemirkav, o chamar lemishte. You said amar, but it doesn't make any sense. So we have to change it and assume you meant chamar, even though you pronounced it amar. You meant chamar. And what did you mean? Did you mean a chamar donkey to ride on? Or did you mean a chamar, which is chamra, chamar's wine, to drink? Or perhaps, I should take it literally, and it wasn't chamar that you mentioned, that you meant, you meant amar, but you meant amar with an ayin. Amar le milbash, amar is wool, imra is wool. And did you mean that you wanted to buy wool for wearing it, to make clothing out of it? Or imar le'iskese, or maybe imar is a sheep, and you want to slaughter a sheep. In other words, they were not careful about the way they spoke. Hahi isisa debaya le'memar le'chavrta, a certain woman wanted to tell her friend, ta di ochlich chelba, come that I might give you some fat to eat. But she wasn't clear about her speech. Amro le, instead she said, Shlochte tuchlich livya. Shlochti, I don't know exactly what shlochti means, but may a lion eat you. So he has a footnote here. He says what she had in mind was to say, Shlovti, my friend. But her speech was unclear. And it sounded like shlachti, which is a word that makes no sense whatsoever. Then, to add insult to injury, she took two words, Toi and De'uchlech, which means come that I may feed you, and she combined them together. It sounded as she was saying Tochlich, it will eat you. Now the Ches of Chelba was not enunciated carefully to distinguish it from the Chaf at the end of De'uchlech. So instead of Chelba, which is fat, it sounded like Levaya, which is a lion, a female lion. So may a lion eat you. That's what she says to her friend. And all this are examples of, I know if this is not necessarily Galil, but in general, the Gemara is talking about in imprecise speech. He issa di asya l'kami de dino. She came in front of the judge, and she wanted to report the theft of a large tablet. Amr lay, she said to the judge, Mari Kiri, my master's slave, Tafla Havisli, I had a beam, the Ganvuch Min, and they stole you from me. I mean, again, it's all gibberish. Ukidu Havis, and now it was, Dechad Shadrulech Iluye, that when they hang you on it, Lomati Karech Ahari, your feet do not reach the ground. Again, she intended to say one word, and instead she said another word. So instead of saying Kiri, which is master, she called him a slave. She intended to say Tavla, which is a tablet, but she called it Tiflo, which is a beam. She intended to say Ganva Minoi, they stole it from me, but what she said, it sounded like Ganvuch Min, they stole you, the judge, from me. I mean, just Imasa Debei Rebbe. Again, another example of some sort of ambiguous language. So we're talking about the maidservant in the house of Rebbe. Ki havis mishtai b'loshen chachamim. She spoke in an enigmatic language. And the reason for this is she used her wisdom. It would not be proper for the maidservant to tell the students dining at the house of Rebbe to leave or to stay, so she cleverly disguised her speech in riddles. Amra Hachi, here's what she said. Alos nikvas bakad. The ladle hits the barrel. Yidun nishraya likinenhon. The eagles should fly to their nests. So this was a nice way of saying that, you know, you've extended beyond your stay. You know, finish your meal and go home. So the ladle hits the barrel means the bottom of the barrel. It's the wine barrel is empty. You've already cleaned out Rebbe from all his wine. It's time to go home. And the birds should fly back to their nests. You know, we used to say, we hate to see you go. And in the opposite case, where she wanted them to stay at the table, maybe Rebbe wanted them to stay longer, and it was improper for her to say, stay. Havi Amrlehu, she would say in a riddle form, Yade Bosar Chavertamino. Okay. So this has to do with a stopper that resembles a crown on the top of a barrel. And a piece of a friend shall be removed from her. Now let's remove the stopper from a different barrel. V'titkve olas bekad ke'ilfa di azla biyoma. So that the ladle will float in the full barrel like a ship that goes to sea. In other words, she was telling them they're going to open up another barrel, a new barrel, so please stay around. In the first case, she wanted to get rid of them, so she said the barrel is empty. But here she said, no, that we're going to remove the stopper from another barrel, meaning we're going to open up a brand new barrel of wine. Rabbi Yossi bar Asyon ki avi mishtoi b'loshon chochma omar. He too would use a hinting kind of a language. Asuli shar b'mishpat b'tur miskein. Prepare for me an ox in judgment on a poor mountain. In other words, instead of saying, prepare for me beets with mustard. V'kad havi shoyel b'ushpiza omar hachi. When he wanted to inquire about the welfare of an innkeeper, he would say the following, Gvar pum dein chai, is the mouth of the man of this mouth alive? Mazu tova yesh, what is good, what is this good that there is? In other words, is the innkeeper alive? How well is it going with him? So the word for an innkeeper is ushpiza, and it's made up of osh, pi, ze. Osh is similar to ish, pi is similar to pe, and za is similar to ze. So instead of saying the word innkeeper, which is ushpiza, he said the man of this mouth. And he wanted to inquire about the welfare of the innkeeper and his wife, but it's not proper to ask about another man's wife, so he disguised his words in a way that only the person to whom he directed the question would actually be able to solve the riddle and understand what he was asking. Rabbi Avo ki avi mishtoi b'loshen chachma, when Rabbi Avo tried to use a language which was indirect and diplomatic, havi omar hachi, would say the following, asrigu lefechamin, make the coals like an esrog. Now, it's burn the coals to make them glow like an esrog, so that we can warm ourselves by them. So the esrog is symbolic of something that glows. Arkiu lezahavin, spread out the golden ones, and it spread out the coals which glow like gold. V'asuli shnei magidi balta, and make me two indicators in darkness, which means prepare two roosters for me. In other words, he called a rooster an indicator in darkness, because nosin lasechli vina, because when the crow lets out its cock-a-doodle-doo, it tells us what time it is. So this is the way that he told the people that they should prepare two roosters for him. Ika diamid is another transmission. V'yasu li bahem shnei magide balta. Make with them, with these coals, two indicators and darkness, and roast the roosters on the coals. Amri le rabbonu le rabbi avo, hatzpinenu hechan rabbi loy tzofun. In other words, we don't know where rabbi avo is hiding. Can you show us where he's hiding? Amalehen, rabbi avo replied, alatz binara. He rejoiced with the young woman, Aaronis, she's from the family of Aaron. Achronis, she's the last of that family. Aaronis, and she's very alive. Vehin iratu, and she kept him awake last night, and now he is sleeping. So this is what Rabbi Avo answered when they asked him, where is Rabbi Loi? Amri le isha, how do we interpret the hints of Rabbi Avo? According to one approach, he was referring to a woman. Now, Rabbi Loi was married to a second woman, and he stayed up the previous night with his new wife, and that's why we don't know where he is. I guess he didn't show up in the Beis Medrash. The Amri Le Masechta, some say that it was a reference to a Masechta. Now, Rabbi Loi was up the whole previous night studying a Masechta. Now, how do you fit that into the comments of Rabbi Avo? Alatz binara, he enjoyed himself by studying a tractate, Aaronis, that deals with the laws affecting the family of Cohen. In other words, something in Kodshim. Acharonis, meaning it is his latest subject of study. In other words, he had finished one Gemara and now he's starting a new Masechta, Aaronis, and it's a very stimulating, exciting Masechta of Henirusso, and it kept him up awake during the night, and that's why we don't know where he is. Amri le Rabbi Eloi, so they said to Rabbi Eloi, Hatzpinenu Hechon Rabbi Avo. This is just the opposite. Now they talk to Rabbi Eloi about Rabbi Avo. Where's Rabbi Avo hiding? You know, he hasn't shown up. Amar lehen, so Rav Eli responded, Nisyaitz b'machtir. He took counsel from one who crowns. Machtir, Miloshin Kesser, he gives a crown. Vehigniv l'mefiboshes. He went south to Mefiboshes. Which means, Mefiboshes was one of the great scholars, so that the Nasi gave Rabbi Avo permission to go south and to learn from the great scholars in the south. And when he speaks about one who crowns, he took counsel from one who crowns, that's a reference or an allusion to the Nasi, because the Nasi has the authority to give smicha. And the great scholars of the south were referred to as Mefiboshes because of the great famous scholar of that name. He was David Amel's Rebbe. Om Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, mi yomai lo nitzchani odom. No one ever got the better of me in a debate. Again, we don't know who won the debate, but anyway, just kidding. Chutz mi isha tinok v'tinokes. There was a woman, number one, a little boy, and number three, a little girl. And now we go through the three stories. Isha Maihi, what was the case where a woman defeated, so to speak, Rabbi Yoshua with words? Pamaches nesarachti eitzel achsanya achas. I was staying at an inn. Also li polin. And she prepared beans for me. Biyom rishon achaltim. On the first day I ate the beans. Velo shiati mem klum, and I cleaned out my plate. Shnia, velo shiati mem klum, again on the second day, Nochamol, she gives him beans, and he cleans out the plate. Yom Shlishi, hikti chasan b'melach. She put too much salt in the beans. Kevin shetamti mashachti yodeh behem. As soon as I tasted the beans, I withdrew from them. In other words, I stopped eating them. Amrali, so she asked me, Rebbe, mipnei mayin chasoed, why aren't you eating? Amarti lo, I said, kvar sa'adati mivod yom. I ate during the daytime. This was in the evening. Amrali, so she said, why are you eating the bread? In other words, the very fact that you ate the bread indicates that you're hungry. Amrali, Rebbe Shemelo Inachti Peo Berishonim. Is it possible that you did not leave over Peah means a small portion of the beans from the first serving. And therefore, you're leaving over some beans now. In other words, I think what she's suggesting, if I understand this correctly, if we had more time, I would... she's suggesting that maybe he realized he made a mistake by not leaving over any of the beans from the day before that. V'lokach amru chachomim, but the Rabbanan said, a mishayrin peyo b'ilfis, that you should not leave over a portion in the pot. In other words, if somebody's serving food and he pours from the pot into the individual plates, it's not customary for him to leave over anything in the pot for his own needs. He relies instead on the portions left over on the plates of the people attending the meal. Al mishayrin peyo b'ka'ara. But on the plate itself, we do leave a portion over. So basically, she was criticizing him for not leaving over any part of the portion on her plate. Tinokes Maihi, what's the incident with a little girl? Pam Achas. Oh, excuse me for 1 minute, I'm sorry. So I'm just going to add the Hebrew translation here because the English didn't do it for me. I don't know. He says, "Klomar shema shachachto laniach avuri ma'ak min atavshilim harishonim ulufichah miskaven ato laniach ato min atavshil shlishi afal ashnayim hakodmi." She suggested that he should not have emptied out his plate on the first, so he should have left some for her. And then she quoted the Chachamim that Kasher Shamash Ma'avir Sa'ochem Na'kedera La'kara Eino Mashayar B'kedera Klum L'tzarko Avala Ochlim B'sa'udah Menichim Kol Echon Ma'achol B'kara L'tzarech Ma'achol Hashamash. In other words, basically she said that he had made a mistake by cleaning out the, you know, the plate, emptying his plate on the first two occasions, the first previous evenings, and therefore he was now, so to speak, doing tshuva, he's making amends, and he was now giving her some more of the beans, extra beans. He says, Osa Isha Ratzalo Chicho, she wanted to give him a rebuke, beremes, by allusion, Al Asher Lo Hiniach Avura, he finished up all the beans, and there was nothing left for her to eat. And the Chacham say that you should leave over for the Shamash. So therefore she said to B'derech Tzchok, Shema Kavanoscho Lahashir Atom in Amachal, Af Bishvil HaYomayim HaKodmin. Ah, she realized she was really being cynical, and she realized that he didn't want to eat the beans. But instead, she said, oh, maybe now you're doing tshuva for what you were meant to do and you didn't do. So we're up to Tinokas Maihi. And this is towards the bottom of Nun Gimel Amid Beis. Tinokas Maihi. This is about 10 lines up before the end of Nun Gimel Amud Beis.